It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we are here on yet another glorious Saturday morning. We're inside. Angela said she'd take our hour. And I thought about it for a half a second and said, no, I don't want to do that.
No.
But, you know, it's nice out there.
It's a nice offer, but
yeah,
not enough money to back it up.
Yeah, and besides, you never want to be absent for a show at the end of what is one of the finest weeks in stock market history. So we're here happily today. We're always happy, but we're a little happier today than sometimes. And we're going to talk about that probably extensively because it has some implications and observations and so on and so forth. But first, I want to welcome back all the regulars. You're the reason we're in year number 11 now and counting. No plans to change it at all. Just keep showing up and listening to us. And better yet, what we want to talk about is usually fun and interesting, but what you want to talk about is much more important yet. So anybody has anything to say, just pick up the phone, dial 904-222-8255, and we will put you right on. If you'd prefer to do an email because you're kind of queasy about such things, first off, know that we don't bite. In fact, the easiest questions are the best ones because it makes us look good, which is your primary job, in case you aren't aware of that. But we will take an email and answer it next week if needed. That's info@StrivusWealth, StrivusWealth.com. And that, of course, being the parent company of the Van Wee Financial Hour. And the sponsor. In other words, when the bill comes, they pay it. Not me.
Well,
I paid enough of them over time. And anyway, if you're new to this show, try to listen in. Try to stay for the whole thing, if you will. We'll promise you, you'll learn something. Useful or not is totally up to you, but there's always some good information here. We strive, if I might, every week to bring you interesting things, both about what's going on and about the practice and the theory of comprehensive financial planning, investing, and all that fun stuff that everybody is concerned with. I can't think of a topic in the world that affects more people than money. So we will have also a trivia question right after the first break, and then we'll get on with the show. But anytime you want to call, we do not restrict phone calls to a certain time. Just pick up the phone and call, and the lines are open. All right. Well, as I mentioned, it was a fun week if you're in our business or if you're a client or if you just got some money in the market.
Yeah, I found that the most fun stat that, not really a stat, but anecdote that I saw was that if I told you that the Dow was up 548 points yesterday, would you believe that it was the worst performing index of the major indexes?
That would be hard.
But it's true. That it was exactly the case that it was a really strong buying going into the weekend. And the Dow was up the majority of all day on Friday, but it really bought into the close. And that gain of over 500 points was just a 1.3% gain. And I say just because the S&P gained 81 points or 1.4%. The NASDAQ gained 295 points or 1.5%. But the best performing index was the Russell 2000 Small Cap Index, which gained 43 points, which translated into 2.2% on Friday alone.
Those aren't words you're accustomed to saying.
No, especially when it comes to small caps. They have not been going that direction lately. The week was even better. The S&P was up 2.9%, the Dow up 3%, and the NASDAQ gained 3.4%. And while none of the major indexes are up for the year, and they're all off more than 7% from their all-time highs, but the turnaround from the sell-off after Liberation Day, April 2nd, was nothing short of remarkable. It really, to see an index drop 10% and rebound the entire 10% in basically a month, pretty crazy.
Yeah, I want a show of hands out there because you know who you are out there. Everybody who sold out on the way down, raise your hand, look in the mirror and say, I need a new advisor.
I am happy to say we did not have a single client even call in panic.
I know. That's got to be some kind of a record.
It is. And I'm proud of them all. Yep. And we all stuck through it. And were rewarded on the other side for it. So,
and it's a good thing, because they would have been powerfully angry at us when the turnaround came that quickly,
for sure.
And we could not possibly have known to jump on it right then.
Yep.
That's the problem's never getting out. That's easy. Problem is always getting back in.
It is. It makes it so difficult. Mentally, it seems like something that would be so easy to do. Well, you just buy at the bottom. Well, no, that's the problem. You never know when the bottom is. And sometimes the bottom goes away before the market even opens, like on that big Wednesday when Trump announced
the gap,
that happened midday. But still, there's no way you could have known that was the day and bought that morning.
No, but I'm hopeful that all you young people out there are making your contributions every month, and you know, having your paychecks withheld or whatever you're doing. Dollar cost averaging has not been this much fun in several years.
It's true. I decided that I was going to buy 100 shares of the total market every day. The market was down in early April, and I did. And so every time it dropped, I bought 100 more shares, mm-hmm. and that's definitely rewarded me.
I'll bet.
One nice thing about this rally is that the breadth has been really strong, and that means that the number of stocks in the S&P 500 that are participating in the rally is very wide, and it's not just a handful of mega cap stocks that are leading this rally higher. That usually signals underlying strength of a rally in the rally. Like when you see just the Mag 7 performing really well, that is not a healthy market sign. But when you see 350 of the 500 stocks in the S&P 500 going up on the same day or in the same time period, that is usually a sign of a healthier economy.
Joey and I did the trivia question last week.
Oh, okay.
It was about how every stock in the S&P 500 was up one day and how rare that is.
Very rare. Almost never happens.
Yeah, virtually never.
Yep. There's something called
It was in the NASDAQ 100.
Oh, okay. There's something called a cumulative advance decline line, and that is something that tracks the number of stocks that are moving higher on any given day. So you can make a chart out of that, and typically it tracks pretty well with the S&P 500. Right now it's actually outperforming the S&P 500, and that doesn't happen very often. But when it does happen, it tends to lead to really solid returns 6 to 12 months down the road. So kind of a unique data point that I found this morning, and I just thought I would point out. International stocks also rallied this week, and much of that rally came on Friday. The All World Except U.S. Index ended the week up 2.6%, just slightly behind U.S. markets. International stocks have outpaced the U.S. this year. They're up 10.7 versus negative 3, but are almost even on a year-over-year basis, with the S&P up 13.7 versus the All World Index up 12.2. So kind of an interesting divergence there.
Yeah, what's going on now, I don't know if you'd call it a reversion to the norm or something like that, but it's a participating type market, in that a lot of stocks are actually participating. Before, as you were saying, the big ones were going up and everything else was going down fast. We got a lot more to say, so don't go anywhere. We'll take a quick break and be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we do have a call, which we will take momentarily, but I did want to put the trivia question out just to make it fair to everybody. The trivia brought to you, as usual, by Paul Lloyd at First Coast Alarm. You can call Paul at 904-636-7888. 14% of Americans planned to retire before the age of 60. How many Americans, percentage-wise, actually retired before the age of 60?
I would call it the lucky few.
Yeah. In some cases, you're probably right.
Mm-hmm.
We shall see. It's just a percentage. All right, without further introduction, good morning, Bob.
Good morning, gentlemen.
How's things?
It's so peaceful out here on the bend. I told the screener that I've never been on such a wonderful and thrilling roller coaster ride in the last month. And you know what? When it all ended, we're all alive, right?
Yeah,
so, I mean, hey, you know, there's no complaints. We just, it was thrilling. It was fantastic.
Bring it on.
And I'm out here on the porch having my second cup of coffee after chores, listening to the Hawks, the mother Hawks, train the babies. They're all flying around. It's very peaceful.
Cute. Cool.
Wonderful. Hey, what you guys are able to solve many problems. One of the things I wanted to ask you about is with the markets and our economy, we're seeing some creep in the judicial system, a lot of creep in the judicial system, all the way to the Supreme Court, with one of the justices calling Trump the elephant in the room. How can we as Americans make our judicial system apolitical? That's my question, and I think that has the potential for screwing up not only the markets, but the future of the United States.
The person who comes up with that answer should be crowned king. being a little facetious, you know.
That's a good question.
Some of the justices think the king is already in the White House.
Yeah. So. You know, it would help a lot if we had a good chief justice, and we don't. In my opinion, we do not.
Yeah.
I think that was one of Bush's more serious mistakes, not putting him on the court. He was perfectly well qualified to go onto the court. But he shouldn't have made a guy with zero Supreme Court experience into the Chief Justice. That said, it's a job for life. So let's move along to the world of the possible. And I think it's going to take our Solicitor General, who will be arguing in front of the Supreme Court to try to get this thing fixed a little bit. It takes people like Pam Bondi, and it takes people like Donald J. Trump. They're going to have to just keep shouting it out because the media is working against that goal that we all should have. And unfortunately, there's a whole lot of people who get their news from places like MSNBC and Facebook and on and on and on, instead of getting exposed to some common sense. And that's a tough thing. I don't know how they're going to do it, but we do need to tailor some courses and get them appealed to the Supreme Court right away and make cogent arguments for having the judges understand their role in society. There are something like 560 federal judges, and they each have their own little area, but they like to make rulings that affect everybody, and they've got to be corralled. How we do it? Not really quite sure.
Great question. That makes sense.
Yeah, great question. But you can't solve the court system without a very willing Congress unless you try to do something like amend the Constitution. That takes years and years and years. There's a reason it hasn't been done very often. You pose a great dilemma. How's that?
Yeah. Well, somebody's got to come up with a solution, because I think
yes, they do.
As the politics swing, wind shear effect really affects the country and the markets,
and
financially. And I think that that's one of the key things in the teeter totter. You know, we need a balanced teeter totter, not one swinging this way and that way every other election. So, a swing at your trivia.
Do it.
I'd say 4%.
Too low. You bracketed a bit, but too low.
There you go. Okay. All right.
Appreciate it.
Well, you guys enjoy the show. Have a great rest of the day and a great weekend. Hopefully it doesn't rain all over you. That's what they're predicting.
We could use some over this way. So I'll take it as it comes, I guess.
Take care, Bob. Talk to you soon.
See you soon.
Bye.
Yeah, that's a fine question. There's a headwind out there when it comes to the Justice Department in general. Fortunately, the head of it isn't part of the problem. She's part of the solution. Well, time will tell. Anyway, let's get back to the fund market. And I know we've got earnings, we've got jobs, and we've got GDP and all, and we got topics today, man. We're just going to keep talking, so keep interrupting us if you want to.
Yeah, I wanted to start out actually with gold, which has been a great investment lately, but saw a bit of a reversal on that trade, which was I've honestly been kind of expecting. It got pretty high there. Gold fell 2.2% this week, silver fell 3%. And oil was down 7.3%.
That's the one where the real move was happening.
Yeah, definitely. So commodities in general were in reverse this week, falling 2.5%. So the gold thing was really interesting, though, because I think a lot of people were expecting that to just keep running, and historically that has not been what happens in precious metals. It runs up and hits an new all-time high, and then usually, more often than not, you see a kind of a pullback, and mm-hmm. that may be what we're seeing. We don't know yet, but be interesting to follow. The bond market was down this week. Yields rose in the second half of the week. In the first half of the week, they were actually falling, and then they reversed pretty sharply. The overall market was down 34 basis points, while the short treasuries fell just 6 basis points. But long treasuries were off by almost 1%. That was a pretty steep move there at the end of the week. Almost 900 companies have now reported earnings, with 71% beating their earnings estimate and 62% beating their sales forecast.
Very respectable.
Not bad at all, especially considering all the doom and gloom leading into the quarter. I mean, those results they're solid. They really mm-hmm. are. They're like above long-term averages. The most surprising thing is that guidance has also been in line with historic norms, mm-hmm. despite all this uncertainty around tariffs and economic policy. The four biggest reports this week were Meta, Microsoft, Amazon, and Apple, and they basically all exceeded their forecasts. The stocks had different reaction, though. Apple stock actually sold off on the report because analysts suspect that some of their sales increase and profit increase was due to people buying before the tariffs hit. So not sure if that was the case, but it certainly makes sense. There was some interesting economic data this week, as you mentioned, including the jobs data and GDP report. The GDP report actually came in negative for the first quarter. However, well, I don't want to spoil your surprise.
I'll jump on that part. It's not what it looks like.
Yeah,
let's just put it that way for now.
It really wasn't in this case, and it was a very glaring one data point that. Yep. Brought down the report, and so you can hardly even call it a negative quarter.
No,
so
it's a negative number.
Yeah,
which so then, is you know here we are arguing, and we sound like 2022 all over again,
yeah.
where the GDP went down under Biden, and they kept saying, well, that's not really an indicator of a recession, even when it happened a second time in a row.
They just brushed it under the rug for nothing to see here.
That's totally different situation.
Yeah. Which one do you want to talk about first, GDP or jobs?
Let's get into jobs.
Okay. So we saw a jobs report this week. It was better than expected, and it was 177,000 jobs on the headline number on Friday. So that's pretty solid. This also led me to the dumbest article of the week. So this article was talking about that, and it said that the 177,000 was a notable decline from March's stronger than expected 228,000. The very next line of the article mentions that actually March was revised down to 185,000. So was it a notable decline from 225,000? No, it was almost on par with the 185,000. Who writes this stuff?
The competition for dumbest article of the week is robust.
It's amazing. The February report was also revised lower to 102,000. So it was actually well up from February. But all in all, that's kind of a Goldilocks number. It's right in the middle. The above 200,000 is like a hot economy, and anything lower than that, you could make an argument that isn't strong growth.
Let me guess, they glossed over that part about how federal government employment went down 29,000.
That was not in this article.
Oh, no. That's shocking.
Nope. So the private sector added 167,000 jobs. That's a good data point, I think. Unemployment rate remained the same. And the labor force participation rate was 62.6%. So not overall, not bad.
No, the household survey also, the one that people don't hear much about, the household survey showed a whopping 436,000 people went to work. But the birth-death adjustment, which is the estimate they make for businesses being formed and businesses closing, that was 383 of them. So if you put this all together, it doesn't say recession and it doesn't say hyperinflation And it doesn't say the Fed should be scared to do anything. That's where I think all of this is headed. If you look at that and add in the trueflation number, which this morning was 1.36 year over year, I have now changed my opinion on the Fed cut, and I think there will be one in May.
There should be.
Yeah, that's the whole point, I guess, is, yeah, they finally should be. We got a lot more to do and say right after another short break, so don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we remind you all that the lines are open, 904-222-8255. And the trivia question is out there. 14% of Americans plan to retire before 60. What percentage of Americans actually did that? This is just a recent survey over the past few years. I don't have the entire time frame, but that's not really the point. Anyway, the point is what the plans were and what the reality became. And we do know that 4% is too low. We don't know much else. All right, let's spend a moment in the Wayback Machine. Way back when I was in high school and college studying economics, the term that was taught was GNP, Gross National Product, which had all the elements of the things that are in the GDP number today. But the final part was net exports. This country at that time was a net exporter. That, of course, has changed over time. So sometime around 1990, we always knew about GDP. It figured the foreign stuff differently than when we send them over there. And I'll explain that in a second. But then all of a sudden, you don't hear anymore about gross national product. And it's kind of sneaky, but I suppose there's good reason. But the difference is the gross domestic product takes the value of the consumption of goods and services acquired and consumed by the country's households. And you notice that inclusive statement says, well, that means we're counting the things we buy as imports, and that's why they do it. Now, the GNP number, it's different. It measures all of what is produced by Americans no matter where they live. So we're really getting in the weeds when you talk about those things, and I don't intend to do that because, quite frankly, it's not that important. What is important is that the formula for the GDP is altered by behavior recently. That's why, as Adam said, we came up with a negative number, and it's not really reflective of an economy going south. The reason for that is the threat of all of the tariffs caused especially businesses to buy from overseas and build up their inventories. Inventories rose sharply because the purchasing rose sharply. The net result of that, formulaic-wise, is that it detracted from the GDP, causing it to go negative. But it's a one-time thing. And in fact, the truth is far different than that. Business investment was up 10%, and business equipment investment was up 22%. Now, those are not numbers that one finds in an impending or already realized recession. They are numbers that are very strong, very, very strong. Now, when these factories start to be built, the first thing that happens is, aside from real estate changing hands, which is good for the transactional people out there, but the first thing that happens is construction companies boom. They absolutely boom. Can you imagine $7 trillion or more of investment in this country, all of which are going to require, at a minimum, revamping a factory floor or something like that, but many of which will actually take place in an environment where what used to be a cornfield is now going to be a high-tech factory. That's going to keep so many construction people busy, and construction pays pretty good wages. That will be very helpful for the overall economy. And then instead of going away, when those projects are done, then they have to fill the factory with people working, or not going to do them any good. So people working in the manufacturing sector are also very well paid. So instead of flipping hamburgers for an extra few million Americans, we're going to be doing some things like were done back in the 80s, up until late 80s, actually. I remember very well Ronald Reagan giving a famous speech to the world, basically. It started out like this. The dollar is just too strong. Now, this is an argument that I promise you will never end, because there is no absolutely right answer. Steve Forbes says the only goal ought to be a stable dollar. It, you know, pick a number or whatever and keep it stable. In his mind, that's what the Fed should be striving for. I am more on the side of I would like to see the dollar down a bit more because it makes exporting better. Well, if you look what Trump is doing, the export business is probably going to boom a lot, because if you make something in this country, there won't be tariffs on it no matter where it's sold, unless they're imposed by somebody overseas, and all that does is punish their own citizens. So that, to me, is a very good thing. But add to that, a tax rate for things made in America, corporate tax rate of 15% rather than today's 21%. You can pay a lot of bonuses to a lot of people, as we found out in the early days of COVID, when all of a sudden lower taxes hit companies right in the bottom line, and they tend to get a little more generous. Plus, they have more competition for employees, which means wages go up. Right at the moment, wages are outpacing inflation pretty substantially. Overall wages are growing at about 5% now. Inflation is arguably somewhere between about 2.5 and 1.25, depending on who, what, where, when is doing the calculation.
Personal income was up 0.5% in March.
There you go.
And it's up.
That's a big number.
4.3% in the past year, okay. While inflation is below 3% now.
So now when real wages rise, people spend money. It's just that simple. Now, there are going to be some headwinds on that. Like, they're going to start collecting student loan payments again and that sort of thing. So it isn't all a bed of roses out there. Speaking of which, we're running for the roses at about 3:03 tonight. Don't forget, it's Kentucky right. Derby Day. For some reason, I'm not a horse fan or a horse racing fan, but I love the Triple Crown races.
Yeah, they're fun event to gather for. Mm-hmm. It means nothing to me like you, but some people go crazy for it.
Yeah, pay $5,000 for a mint julep. They're nuts. But I digress, as usual. Anyway, what is happening out there is it's going to shake things up in a variety of ways that will wind up in good shape. You never will hear that from the mainstream media, because they don't want Trump to succeed at anything at all. In fact, they'll spend hours now on the fact that lunatic from Michigan put articles of impeachment into the Congress, and all of a sudden, three people who had sponsored it decided they're going to back off right this minute, three Democrats. So it's not going anywhere, but they will spend so much time on this and justifying it or whatever they think they're doing, but read between the lines and get a thorough batch of news, which is partly done by listening to this program. And I think you'll see that over the next, the remaining 3.5 years of this administration at least, you're going to see things get a whole bunch better economically, and the word recession is not going to apply. That is my humble opinion.
Two things on that. One, the ISM Manufacturing Index actually declined in April. It declined the previous month as well, which means that the manufacturing sector is contracting. So that's concerning, and also another reason that we could use a rate cut this month. And so that's something that I would like to see turn around. The other thing I just wanted to mention is that my least favorite argument around this whole tariff conversation is that Americans don't want to work in factories. That's just crazy. Not true. It's a personal bias of a college-educated white-collar worker thinking that no one would ever want a high-paying factory job. That's ridiculous. I want to work at a computer in a tower with a view. No, that's not real life. That's like your Ivy League educated idiot.
Count the computers on the factory floor in a semiconductor plant.
For sure. Yeah, that's true.
These places are spotless.
Yep, they have to be.
By definition.
Yeah. Yep.
That's not the only thing we're going to be manufacturing, but today's factories aren't like the old days.
That's also true. But honestly, even if they were more like that and more heavy-duty machinery, if you have a high-paying job that offers great benefits versus a service job that is relying on tips that are inconsistent, I mean, there's a lot of people out there who will make that switch. There's no doubt about it.
Absolutely. And you know how you attract people to jobs that they didn't think they wanted? You advertise the wages.
Yep.
They'll be there.
It's not that hard.
And not only the wages, but the historically, the fringe benefits in manufacturing are extraordinary, as they are in semiconductors and things like that. I think you're going to see so many problems in places like McDonald's. That's why they're already automating. They're going to have a lot more trouble hiring people when everybody's going back to work for twice that much money and full benefits. So,
yeah, a lot of these places you can't even order from a person anymore. You have to type it in the computer and then they bring it out to you. There's people there, but they're not taking your order anymore.
No, it's already changing. It's already getting set up. It takes, unfortunately, the barriers to entry monetarily are not that bad because there's so much money pledged already. But the barrier to entry of time.
Time, yep. It takes time.
We've got factories that can be rehabbed in less time, that sort of thing. But it's going to take some doing to get this whole thing going. And most people lack foresight and patience for these things. But I'm telling you, keep your eyes open. When it starts happening, you're going to see some tremendous numbers come out. And I think the stock market is going to go absolutely nuts. But not quite yet.
Yep, we'll see.
Patience is a virtue. We'll be right back after one final short break. Don't go anywhere. This is the Vanwee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Vanwee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Vanwee.
And I'm Adam Vanwee.
And the lines are open, 904-222-8255. Trivia question remains, while 14% of Americans planned to retire before age 60, how many actually did? We know that 4% is too low. All right, a couple of little announcements. Let's start with some good news. Despite interest rates coming back a bit and inflation rates coming back a bit, and it looks like that trend will continue, I-bonds, you might know, reset every November 1 and May 1. Well, we just passed a May 1. What happened? I-bond rates went up, and they're looking pretty good. If you purchase I-bonds between today and October 1st, you will earn 3.98% for the first 6 months, and the previous rate was 3.11. So that's looking real good. If you're an I-bond type, it might be a good time to go to Treasury Direct or what's the other one? There's another way to get there. TreasuryDirect.gov works.
Yeah, that's the only one I know of.
Okay. All right. Speaking of government, speaking of online things, Social Security has never had a digital access to your Social Security card. That is changing. By summer, early summer, you should be able to access your Social Security card digitally, which means you can store it on your device, which means if you have to produce it, you're going to have it. This has never been done before, and I think it's a wonderful thing. A couple little tidbits here. There are 47 valid versions of the Social Security card in use today. Did you know that?
That's a lot.
There are even some that are metal.
Didn't know that.
I didn't either. But from now on, those are going to be much different because they will wind up just phasing everything out like that and going digital because it's the way the world is working. But just so you know, it will happen. And in order to get one, you will have to get onto the website, which is ssa.gov, I believe, Social Security Administration, or you can Google your way into it or whatever search engine you're using. It shouldn't be that one, but I digress once again.
I know a lot of people won't be comfortable with that, but I am a big proponent of getting rid of wallets and just having a phone. And so I would be happy to do it along with a driver's license, along with a fishing and hunting license. I think it all should be digital and be able to be accessed right there.
Florida, which leads the way on most of that stuff.
Yeah, you can do it with your insurance now.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Who would carry that? I suppose you're supposed to. But even if you get stopped, I hear, I've never been stopped, pulled over, but I hear that you can pull it up on your phone.
You can. You can. For sure. So okay. I just think it's so much more convenient, and I'm all about convenience.
Okay. Well, here's another good one. I got a series of mostly good news things that are interesting. Trump is now floating a little bit different look at the tax cuts, and I would think that this would have to be in a secondary package. But one of his goals, he wants to see if they can get it so that people making under $200,000 a year pay no income tax. It's good news if you're making under $200,000 a year and you don't think about things like that. But the more you think about things like that, who was it? It wasn't one of our guys. Somebody said, I think everyone should have a little skin in the game, you pay a little something. And I kind of lean that way. On the other hand, I wouldn't blame anybody who is making under 200 grand if they happen to be happy about that concept.
Well, I just get worried about where that revenue gets replaced from. I mean, I'm theoretically good with it, but if
practical realities.
If you're not paying income tax and then also paying 15% more for everything you buy, maybe I don't know.
Yeah, maybe not. DeSantis is trying to eliminate or drastically reduce property taxes. And again, you have to put your eyes on the revenue side of things. I don't see how that's going to be practical.
I don't see it either. The only way that I can see doing that is to raise the sales tax even more, which is, you can make an argument for that either, like both ways, good and bad, because more of your share gets paid for by tourists, but at the same time, it's a regressive tax on poor people. So
it is.
I don't know. I don't love it.
No, there's a lot of these things that if you just glance through the headlines, they really sound like warm, fuzzy things.
Yeah.
And then you think about the implications. Also, in the halls of Congress right now, the discussion broke off with the tax discussion for a simple reason. The SALT deduction, state and local taxes, there are a few holdouts from places like California, New Jersey, and New York who say they will not sign on to this thing unless the SALT restriction is either eliminated or loosened substantially.
Can't eliminate it. There's no reason that we should subsidize high tax states.
Speaking of policy, there's a policy I can support. Don't do that.
Yeah, but can you bump it up? Sure.
Yeah. Well, I have said since the day they passed it, there's two errors in it. One of them is it's a marriage penalty item, meaning it's a single number for whether you're filing as a couple or singly, and it was an inflation index.
Yep.
So double it for married filers filing jointly.
And inflate it
once, and then put a COLA rider on it.
I would be 100% fine with that.
And then you're doing all the right things without doing the wrong things.
Yeah. And this is what a compromise should look like.
Exactly. Good morning, Mike.
Hey, good morning, guys.
How are you?
Hanging in there.
Good.
Something interesting in Barron's, just food for thought. They did a poll of professional investors, America's money managers, and they found that 32% of the respondents are bearish on the outlook for stocks over the next 12 months, which is the highest percentage since 1997.
Yeah, what percentage of money managers are Democrats? 32% would be my guess.
I hear you.
I bet it is heavily influenced by that. But yeah. I think that all the uncertainty that the way the tariffs were announced and the and the speed with which they were designed initially to be implemented, I get it. I can see why that that poll result would happen, especially amongst people that don't like the administration. It makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. And
very good point.
We'll see
Very good point.
Yeah, things are changing so fast. And, of course, China's out there deny. Oh, no, we're not talking. Well, they are talking, and they've already cut some tariffs, and they just announced late this week that they want to sit down and talk some more. They've got a lot more to lose than we do.
I agree.
Let's put it that way.
I agree, too. Anyhow, I'll take a very quick shot at the trivia.
All righty.
Yeah, please do.
Do it.
All right. I'm going to say 10%.
That is too low.
Okay.
In fact,
all right, gentlemen.
I'm just gonna give it out since there's so little time left. The answer and the point. The answer is 32%.
Really?
Yeah.
That many?
Yep. That the concept we're talking about here is the involuntary retirement, which can take place because of illness.
Or you lose your job, can't find another one. Yep. Yeah. And this happens way more often than people think.
Mm-hmm.
And that I actually guessed 25 when he told me because I knew about that fact.
And I thought, and it turned out to be true, that most people would think of it as, well, this many planned to, but not everybody got to because they got to that age and didn't have enough money, when it's really the external factors that pushed it up. So I just thought that would be kind of a fun thing for today. And it worked.
Yeah, some of us in the city of New York, we had deferred compensation.
Oh,
yeah. Allowed us to take it earlier than 60 if you were in a physically taxing job, which I was as an electrician. But I still find that quite high. But anyhow, very interesting. Gentlemen, have a great weekend.
Thank you. Same to you, and we appreciate the call.
Thanks, Mike.
Yeah, it's really... surprising.
I would argue that
until you think about it,
I don't know the exact numbers, but I would guess that job losses in the late 50s are way higher than what people think.
Yep.
And it's really hard to find a job when you're that age. And
it really is.
Especially if you were a high earner that got laid off because you were a high earner and they want to replace you with two young people making a third of your salary.
All right. A couple more informational bites here. 10% of workers planned to retire between 60 and 62, but 29% did, almost three times the plan.
Yeah.
But now, 23% of workers expected to retire at 70 or older or not retire at all. Only 6% made it that far.
Wow.
Yeah.
Huh.
Interesting. I thought this article was fantastic.
Yeah, that's really good stuff. I've never seen that broken down like that.
No, it makes you think a few things maybe differently than you were doing that. In a related item, this is a survey that's been done throughout my adult life, and the answers are always the same. Most people fear running out of money more than they fear death. And it happened again, the most recent survey. That's from ThinkAdvisor website. So it's just all kinds of fun stuff to talk about out there. If you don't want to make anything too complicated, you don't really have to. But I always like having a point, and that involuntary retirement thing should be a real powerful goal for people when they're doing their early financial planning.
Yeah, save early, save often.
Yeah, exactly. Well, thanks so much for listening. As always, we will be right back here next week, same time. Hope to see you there. This is the Vanway Financial Hour.